It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
Older than I'm white.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is going to be huge.
I think this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Time to head home. It is a Tuesday edition of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy. Big Tuesday because USA defeated Iran in World Cup soccer 1-0 today. And so USA moves on to the round of 16, the knockout stage in the World Cup. I don't know who they will play next, but a big win.
I believe it's the Dutch.
The Dutch. Okay, so that will be next for Team USA with a must win today. They got it 1-0. And I'm going to go ahead and use like regular American language. It was a 1-0 victory.
There you go.
And so congratulations to our guys competing in Qatar. Did you know how to say Qatar? How long was it until, like, I said Qatar.
I still say Qatar.
Yeah, it's Qatar. I think that's what it's officially called. It's like Chile.
Chile?
Chile?
Chile? Yeah, Chile.
It's like, what country is Peru?
I'll still say Qatar.
Okay.
Well, honest. I'll be incorrect.
It's like
Qatar just
I'm
sounds
not changing.
Weird.
No, yeah. I'm this old.
I'm already 25.
Yeah, I'm already 25. You can't change me. I'm going to say it my way. If I'm wrong, the rest of the world's got to change to match me. But anyway, all right, let's do it. Let's do some time capsule trivia. We said we've got the big prize today. We've got not only your large pizza to Pizza Hut, a 4-pack of tickets to Comets Hockey against Wheeling coming up this Friday night. It's 4 tickets to the Comet game plus a large pizza to Pizza Hut. All you've got to do to play is call 447-8500. That's area code 260-447-8500. Play some Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia just for being our contestant and getting through. You will get the prize package, including the large pizza and the 4-pack of Comets Hockey tickets. I don't know if you knew about this, Adam, but I thought this was kind of interesting that when I was in Mexico, I was trying to find something to watch because Mexican TV, they were all Spanish stations. I don't speak Spanish, so I didn't know what they were saying. But I finally found a TV guide and it said ESPN, ESPN2.
Uh-huh.
All excited.
Yeah.
Finally found something that I could watch. I could see some college basketball, you know, maybe some football.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got my remote, clicked on the station, and apparently I learned something new, that ESPN and ESPN2 in Mexico is a different ESPN and ESPN2 than we have in America. Because I got to see soccer and Formula One racing.
Oh, there you go.
I was not thrilled because I was just trying to find something I could kill time with.
Different programming lineup down there for
their
stations.
The only two American stations they had were the ABC and CBS station out of Miami.
Huh.
Only stations they had that were American television. 46862 is Parkview Sports Madison text line, 46862. All right, we've got a contestant to play some Tuesday Time Caps trivia. Who's this?
This Joe.
Hey, Joe, how are you? You played before, haven't you?
Oh, yes, sir.
I thought so. How many times have I beaten you?
Once.
Okay, so we've played once.
No, we played three times.
Oh, so Joe has a winning record against me. Joe might be the only one that has a winning record against me. Let's take caller number two today, Adam. All right, so Joe, you know how it works. Let's go ahead and play.
It's time for Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia on the Sports Rush.
All right, let's start off with clue number one. In this year, the London Monarchs won 21-0 over the Barcelona Dragons in the inaugural World Bowl.
Okay, Joe, you know how it works. You can play or pass on clue number one.
I'll play. 1986.
I will say 1979.
All right, let's go on to clue number two. Excuse me. North Carolina is the first NCAA basketball team to win 1,500 games in this year.
It's my turn first. North Carolina, 1,500. I have no idea. 1984.
1988.
All right, we're going to go on to clue number three. With a little World Cup theme, in the FIFA Women's World Cup of this year, the United States won 2-1 over Norway.
Now, was that the championship or was that just...
This is the World Cup, yeah, the championship.
Okay, all right. Joe, you get to go first.
1998. 1999. Ooh. All right, let's go on to clue number four here. Wayne Gretzky becomes the fastest and youngest player in NHL history to score 700 goals at age 29.
Okay, my turn first, right?
Yes, it is.
Wayne Gretzky, I think he is 60 years old. 29 would be 31 years ago. That would be... Okay, so I'll say 1992. I should have stuck with my math, probably. Because I know the math I just said out loud...
Go ahead, Joe.
...wasn't my guess.
At what age?
At age 29.
Oh, no.
He did the math.
No, I did the math right.
Oh.
I did the math. I said he's 60. I took 22, and then I said 9 more years would make it, and then I said I'll go 1992.
You got burned by the math, Brett.
I didn't trust the math.
You got to trust your numbers.
I didn't trust the math. Oh, man. So Joe is 3-1 against me. All right, yeah. We might start calling Joe on Tuesdays instead of Joe calling us. I got to get this record evened up. Hey, congratulations, Joe. Not only do you get the large pizza to Pizza Hut, you're going to get a 4-pack of tickets to the Comets coming up on Friday night.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
Yep, we appreciate you. See, you get me all tongue-tied when I lose. I'm not the same guy. All right, stay in the line, Joe. Adam's got to get some information from you. And we've got to take a break because we've got Greg Rakestraw ready to join us coming up next.
You're listening to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Listen live at 1380thefan.com.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we've got the Mastodons Coaches Show live from the Holiday Inn, Purdue Fort Wayne, right across from Memorial Coliseum. Coach John Kaufman, women's coach Maria Marcassano, all will be joining us 6 to 7 o'clock tonight right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Last night, Colts, another national stage where they kind of, little vomit on themselves, kind of, so to speak. And talk about it. We're joined now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the ISC Sports Network and the Colts postgame host, Greg Rakestraw. How are you today, Rake?
I'm doing good, and thankfully we're friends because you can lead into me with a vomit reference and I'll get it. So I'm fine with that.
Well, here's the thing. All the talk today nationally, everybody's talking about the time management issue. And yeah, the clock management probably wasn't perfect, but that's not the story of the night. The story of the night is this Colts offense still can't get itself going.
No, that's the story. And obviously, Jeff Saturday, if you hadn't seen this, had his kind of Tuesday press conference today where he talked about the fact that, they could have handled the clock management situation much better. But at the end of the day, are the Colts going to be guaranteed to, even if they manage the clock properly there, end up scoring late? I'm not sure they would. You know, I realize that NFL offenses are seemingly down across the board, but this is a team that can't break 20 points. And that was about as far from the expectation coming into the season as you could possibly have. With having a guy like Jonathan Taylor, with having the investment in the offensive line that they do, with bringing in a guy that is a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback in Matt Ryan, and you can't get north of 16, 17 points on a regular basis, that's the problem this team has. Listen, their defense wasn't great last night, which has carried them so often, wasn't the defensive best night. But against a 3-7 football team, one that had won twice since the opening week of the season, when you had an extra day of rest in your building, you scored 17 points. It's just not good enough. And with five games left to go, you know, not much is going to change at this point of the season either.
Matt Ryan is throwing a lot of passes 5, 6, 7 yards downfield. He's not really testing teams all that much vertically. In fact, he did it, I know, once last night and actually completed a deep pass down the field. But most of his passes, very short. Is that mental or is there something physically with Matt Ryan?
No, I think that's because of the offensive line. He hadn't had time for the football down the field. Did I think his arm strength would be a little bit better than it has been? Yeah. Are there times I'd like to see him zip it in there more than kind of placing it? Yes. But I honestly think the biggest reason why you haven't seen the vertical passing threat that we had hoped, it'd be because of the play of the offensive line. You know, he did throw kind of that late ball to Pittman over the middle where Pittman made a play for 28 yards on the last drive of the game. The big play that Jelani Woods had was kind of a second-level throw, about a 15-yard catch where he had another 10-plus yards in terms of yards after contact. But to me, the biggest culprit as to why this has been a horizontal passing attack and not a vertical passing attack is that the quarterback simply has not had the time to make it a vertical passing attack this year.
Saw somebody reference on social media that this team is suffering a great deal from the loss of Jack Doyle, and it hasn't really been addressed. I know he was real important in his blocking in the run game. I don't know how often he stayed in to protect, but how do you change it? How do you fix it? Is it as simple as finding a guy like Jack Doyle? Is it, I mean, you know, what is the problem that needs fixing with that offensive line?
That is, well, the offensive line needs fixing, period. The absence of Jack Doyle exacerbates the problem. You can replicate Jack Doyle as a pass catcher. It's going to be tough to replicate him as a blocker. He was that good. Mm-hmm. But that is one of the sins committed by the front office, in that if you look at the four tight ends that are on this roster, none of them have a background as a blocking tight end. And let me explain. Mo'Ali Cox played college basketball. He's turned into a serviceable NFL pro, maybe not the overall receiving threat that people had hoped, but he still made it 6 years on an NFL roster. There's something to that. But again, is his training as a down-the-field blocker or a down-line blocker? No, it's not. Jelani Woods, for as mammoth as he is and as good of a game as he had yesterday, believe it or not, he's a converted quarterback. Imagine somebody that huge. It's like trying to tackle a Sequoia, but he was a quarterback before he was a tight end. Kylan Granson, who was ill and didn't play last night, he is a converted wide receiver. Drew Ogletree, of course, looked great the first week or two at camp, got hurt, torn ACL, done for the year. He, too, is a converted wide receiver. So you don't have a guy who is used to having his hand in the dirt, or in this case, the rubber pellets, and lining up, you know, and being a left tackle at times. None of those guys have that DNA. And so that was a miss in not either drafting a guy like that, knowing you're drafting two tight ends, nor signing a veteran to provide that offensive line relief in case you needed it, which clearly this group has throughout the course of the year.
What's Matt Ryan's job status? Is there a chance that we could see Sam Ehlinger again?
I think we will at some point. I think that point comes when the Colts are mathematically eliminated from playoff competition. And, you know, can I sit here and tell you the Colts aren't going to be a playoff team with pretty good certainty? Yes. But it's still mathematically possible they rattle off 5 wins and get to 9-7-1 and are a potential wild card team. Yes, those things can happen. I guess what, they're 3.5 games back of the Tennessee Titans right now, knowing they've got the bye week coming up. And so my guess would be is this, and this is not an informed statement. This is speculative on my part. My guess is Matt Ryan is the quarterback against the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. You lose that game, you're 4-8-1, you're going to the bye, you got 4 weeks left to go, and I think you could have a much more honest dialogue and conversation as to what the rest of this season is going to look like. I would hope they go back to Ellinger at some point just to, again, give us a full picture as to what he can do going into the offseason. Because is he as good as he was against the Commanders? Probably not. Is he as bad as he was against the Patriots? I don't think he is either. I'd like to see him back out there. And my educated guess would be that happens after the bye week.
Always great to talk to you, Rake, whether it's in person or here on the show. Appreciate the time.
You got it, buddy. Yep. Enjoy the coach's show.
Hey, appreciate that. That is Greg Rakestraw joining us, Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, of course, from ISC Sports Network. He's the voice of the IHSA Champions Network and part of the Colts post-game show. We'll take a quick break. Zach Osterman joins us when we return. It is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump, Adam Lundy, coming up at the top of the hour. We're heading out to the Holiday Inn, Purdue-Fort Wayne. We've got the Mastodons Coaches Show tonight. Men's basketball coach John Kaufman will be on site, and we'll talk to him not only about the Cancun Challenge, about the win over Bluffton, and how he feels about the team as Horizon League play begins on Thursday with Antoine Davis and former Indiana basketball coach Mike Davis making their lone appearance in Fort Wayne this season. That is Thursday night. And, of course, coming up on Saturday, Oakland will pay a visit to the Gates Center, a special 3 o'clock tip that will be broadcast on ESPNU nationwide. But we've got the Mastodons Coaches Show starting at 6 right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Joining us right now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the Indy Star to talk some Indiana football and basketball, we've got Zach Osterman. Good afternoon, Zach.
How we doing?
Doing well. Let's talk football first. We've got plenty to talk about with Indiana basketball, but to kind of put a cap on the season and to figure out really the status of the Indiana football program, a disappointing loss to Purdue. Of course, injuries played a big part in that, but it capped off what was a somewhat disappointing season in general. As far as head coach Tom Allen, what's his status? Is he safe? Are we waiting for a buyout period? What do you know about Tom Allen and his status as the Indiana coach?
No, I expect, I mean, if there is a change in Bloomington this offseason, and I don't expect one right now, it would be at Tom Allen's hands, not Indiana's. Indiana's behind Tom Allen for the offseason. Or for, I guess, the 2023 season, however you want to see that. Some of it is the status, frankly, of his buyout. I think some of it is just feeling like this place needs to practice patience. And you can agree with that. You can disagree with it. But the reality is Tom Allen found a formula for winning here that Indiana wants to see if he can recreate. And I think between those two factors, I think you understand why Indiana is going to give him at least one more year.
Well, short of recreating a COVID outbreak, I don't know what that winning formula is, because that was the only time Indiana won, right?
I mean, I think, to be fair to Allen, they went to the Gator Bowl in 2019. They went 8-5 that year, had a couple of narrow defeats to Michigan State and Penn State, both on the road. I mean, there was a clear sort of building process to the COVID season, frankly, going back as far, to some extent, as Kevin Wilson's tenure, going to bowl games in his last two seasons, then 2-5-7 seasons that, you know, kind of with the benefit of hindsight, were very much about kind of transitioning the roster as much as transitioning the head coach. If you look at just kind of how much Indiana's roster had to turn over after the 2017 season, it needed some rebuilding. But 2019 was a very good year, too. 2019, until we saw 2020, was the best year we've seen Indiana have in about 25 years. It was just surpassed by the COVID year. And I understand why people look at the COVID year and they say, well, it's kind of hard to take that fully seriously, and that doesn't quite feel normal. I understand that. But again, the COVID year was set against the backdrop of the previous five. It made plenty of sense that Indiana was good that year and was, you know, really good, frankly. And that's why, to be honest, what really hasn't made sense is the last couple of years, certainly 2021, maybe to a lesser extent 2022. But I think if you're Indiana, you want to see if Tom Allen's improved recruiting and some of the classes that he built around that success as those guys become third and fourth year players if he can't pull the program back up again.
Of course, news today, Connor Bazelak is transferring. We already knew that Jack Tuttle was going to transfer. Dexter Williams ends up hurt. We don't know, at least I don't know, maybe you know more than I do, the extent of what the injury was that took him out of the Purdue game. What is the status at quarterback for IU? Do they have anybody? Will they look at the portal? What's the status for the future of the quarterback position?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dexter Williams is the big question right now, just insofar as, I mean, Tom Allen was adamant after the game on Saturday that he wants a real dual threat in that position going forward. And he said that before, and I think, to be fair to him, Michael Penix probably changed his mind just a little bit, if you understand what I mean. I think he got a hold of a player in Michael Penix that we could all see then, and even more so now, was just so special as a passer that he kind of changed the way Allen was thinking about the quarterback position. But I think he would like to go back to that dual threat. Dexter Williams obviously fits that. As much as we could see of him this year, which wasn't a ton, I think Brendan Sorsby can do some of that, the true freshman. They've got a commitment in 2023 named Brock Lowry, who is very much that type of player. Regardless of Williams' injury status, I would expect them to go into the portal for a quarterback this year simply for depth, if nothing else, because now you've got four, you only got three guys on the roster. Because of Williams' injury status, I think it's even more paramount that they do. We don't know exactly what it is yet. Tom Allen suggested he didn't think it was an ACL tear, which, frankly, if it's not, that would be hugely fortunate, just given the way that injury occurred. But I think we should know more soon, possibly sometime this week, one way or the other. I do expect Indiana to be in the portal for a QB. That doesn't mean they're going to get one, doesn't mean they're going to get their first choice. But just when you look at the numbers, even if Dexter Williams gets completely lucky and that's a short-term injury and he's healthy by spring practice, you want at least four bodies at that position. And Indiana's only got three right now going into next season. So I would expect them to go looking for at least one more QB.
Speaking of the portal and looking for players, offensive line was a problem for the Hoosiers all year long. Do they have an incoming class where they can get some help? Do they have anybody that was on the sideline this year? What do they do to fix that offensive line?
I do think there was one of the places where maybe that youth started to break through a little bit this fall was on the offensive line. I thought in particular, the more they played to get together, the better Khalil Benson and Josh Sales looked at right guard and right tackle, respectively. Neither of those guys was a starter at the beginning of the year. They're both young players, Sales in his second year, Benson in his third year, but Benson tore his ACL as a true freshman, so, kind of in his second year developmentally. By the end of the season, they kind of locked down that right side of the line, and I thought they looked a lot better than where Indiana was at the beginning of the year. So I think that it's possible there are some younger players that Indiana can start to pull kind of into that rotation as they develop a little bit more. But if you're looking for instant impact new faces, I think a lot of it's going to have to come from the portal. The reality of offensive line play is most guys can't do it right away. And we've seen a few do it for Indiana in the recent past, thinking about your Matt Bedfords, your Coy Cronks, your Jason Spriggses, your Dan Feeney's. But the reality and the truth is that's kind of few and far between for a lot of players. And so I think that really if you're going to be looking for sort of guys that aren't on the roster now that are going to affect the way that offensive line performs in 2023, my guess is it's much more likely that comes out of the portal. The flip side to that is offensive line help is a little bit like three-point shooting in basketball. Everybody could use some. So it's going to be a busy market, and if you're Indiana, you're going to have to be clever, and you may need to move quickly.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And, of course, everybody eagerly anticipating me to turn it over to IU basketball because that is what it is now. It's basketball season down in Bloomington, and the Hoosiers, top 10 team, along with, I was going to say along with North Carolina. They're not. They were number one. Now they're number 18. So I guess I can't call them a top 10 team, although I still consider them to be maybe one of the top 10 best teams in the country. But they come in with back-to-back losses. What is the state of North Carolina? I mean, I guess the problem is what went wrong for North Carolina the last two times out against Iowa State and Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who will confess to not really having watched much of UNC before they got to Portland, the results they put up before they went out there still weren't great. I mean, I think they only beat Gardner-Webb at home by six. They had a couple other close wins against, teams that normally, if you're talking about the preseason number one team in the country, they should probably be winning those games by 25 or 30, the way we've seen Indiana dispatch of some of these sort of lesser teams they've played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, UNC, obviously, that preseason number one ranking is probably as much sort of respect to being the national runner-up a year ago, and didn't Caleb Love, R.J. Davis, Armando Bacot, Leaky Blackback. But I think it's clear that this it's not a fully formed team. And listen, that's fine. It's November. You know, you don't need to be the finished article. And if you take a couple tough losses here and there, you know, some losses out in Portland obviously don't help you on NCAA Tournament Selection Sunday, but they don't necessarily hurt you. A loss at Indiana wouldn't help you, but it wouldn't hurt you. But they are definitely a team that's not really a finished article by any means. They've still got the faces, you know. I just mentioned them there. And they're kind of, at least through these first few games of their season, kind of handling it similarly to where they were a year ago. Hubert Davis, I think he said today on his pregame Zoom that he's playing eight or nine guys. He's not really. He's basically playing about seven. And even if you look at, for example, that four overtime game against Alabama, I want to say UNC still only had seven players in double figures in a game that went 60 minutes. That's remarkable. This is going to be an interesting test, I think, of Indiana's depth, because we've looked at this bench and we've said, geez, could this be a weapon for Indiana, the way that bench unit plays together and the strength of sort of the individual games of some of those guys, your Malik Renews, your Tamar Bateses, your Trey Galloway's, Jordan Geronimo. Well, this might be a game where your depth can pay off, maybe not immediately, but maybe in terms of wearing North Carolina down if they don't go quite as deep into their bench. On the other hand, UNC may feel like they have to, because they've been on the road for almost a week now. They obviously had three tough games out in Portland, the last of which, as I said, went to four overtimes. I'm almost certain they came straight from Portland to Bloomington. I don't think they've been home. They may feel like they need to go a little bit deeper. And so it's going to be one of the aspects of this matchup that I'm curious about is the rotations and basically just kind of, does Mike Woodson keep the faith with his bench, which is looking pretty good in particularly some of these guarantee games at home early in the season? And does Hubert Davis go a little bit deeper into his bench than we have seen to this point in the calendar?
Yeah, to kind of back up your point, they had seven players, went double figures in minutes in that four overtime game, but one of them only 16 minutes. They had three players over 50 minutes, including Caleb Love, who went 58 minutes, almost played a game and a half against Alabama. Just ridiculous numbers for North Carolina in a November game. Indiana's schedule, completely different from what we've seen from North Carolina or from Purdue, where I don't want to say it's been a soft start, but it's not been the toughest schedule in November. Now, it does toughen up in December. I understand that. But what have you thought about the schedule as far as preparing this team and getting them groomed for conference play?
You know, I think ultimately, frankly, this is kind of the formula for Indiana at this point. Now, it may change depending on kind of what the Big Ten tries to do with the ACC Big Ten Challenge going away after this year. But until this point, Indiana's always kind of targeted this late November to mid-December run of basically the ACC Big Ten Challenge game, the two Big Ten games to start, and then trying to build in, you know, if you think in recent years, obviously Kentucky was at one time on the schedule. They had Louisville on the schedule for a three-game series in recent years. They had the Crossroads Classic, of course, leading into Christmas every year for, 11 years? They've toughened that up, obviously. I think it's fair to say, you mm-hmm. know, Louisville at home compared to Arizona on a neutral floor. No offense to the Crossroads Classic. It was a really fun event. But Kansas at Kansas is a much more difficult test, is a bigger game than a lot of what Indiana was getting in the Crossroads Classic annually. But I think Indiana has kind of embraced the idea that they're okay sort of soft-pedaling their way through November, maybe playing a Gavitt game somewhere in there. Or I remember one year they pulled SMU in for kind of a three-team sort of invitational-type setup. And then from there, really letting the proving ground of their let's say, the first 2 months, because I recognize it now includes a little bit of Big Ten play. But what is mostly their non-conference schedule will be late November to early mid-December. It'll be interesting to see if they change up the thinking on that because they are losing the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It'll also be interesting to see if the ACC Big Ten Challenge gets replaced by something, because that was very much an ESPN-driven event. It's going away because the Big Ten and ESPN are severing ties after this season from a media rights perspective. Would Fox step in and try to organize something with the Big Ten and the Big 12? Would the Big Ten try to organize something? Or would Indiana, you know, I asked Mike Woodson about this point blank today, just said, would you want to replace this game on the schedule knowing you're going to be losing an event that's given you UNC, has given you Duke, has given you Florida State, has given you Syracuse in recent years? And he said, we're always going to try and schedule tough. We're always, you know, he brought the potential resumption of the Kentucky series. Mm-hmm. He just said, we're always going to try and schedule these tough games. So my point is, maybe the scheduling math changes in the near future for Indiana. I do think right now, at least through this year, Indiana is always kind of uncomfortable sort of warming themselves up in November and then really trying to hit, you know, full speed for the pre-Christmas period.
Is there any money involved in a deal, whether they go independent and schedule their own games or whether they go as a conference and try to do some type of a challenge, like you said, against Big 12? Is there a money difference to a program like Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a complicated question to answer. Obviously, if you're Indiana, you will determine sort of the money situation on your own. And typically the way a game, and I'd have to look at the contract. I'm not in front of my computer, forgive me. But like the way a Kansas game would work, for example, mm-hmm. is each team would basically pay the other a roughly equivalent amount. You know, Kansas will pay Indiana a certain amount to come out this year, and that money will largely be used to cover travel expenses and things like that. And then Indiana will do the same for Kansas next year. And so it winds up a wash. And obviously the home team gets the ticket take, and everybody probably gets a little something from the TV partner, whoever that is. And you always engage the TV partner at the front end of setting up any game like this.
Right.
If you go through something that, like, let's say Fox came up with some, you know, ACC Big Ten Challenge replica, if you went through something like that, there would probably be some money involved, but it might be a little bit more abstract. There might be some sort of, you know, advertising kickback. There might be something that goes through the conference. It would be sort of, in that situation, probably more of a rising tide lifts all boats kind of situation, if that makes sense. But I don't think you're talking about, you know, Indiana leaving $5 million on the table for one versus the other. We're probably talking in the tens of thousands, maybe low hundreds of thousands of dollars of difference. And the other thing I would say, too, is when, let's say, a Fox wants to get together something like that, they will come to the major stakeholders involved. That will include the conference, and it probably would include some of the bigger, in this case, basketball schools in the conference to say, hey, how do we make this worth your while, whether it's money, whether it's exposure, whether it's making sure that some of these games are on Fox or some of these games are in primetime or whatever. You know, it there's always going to be give and take there. So I guess my point is there's not a clean answer to that question, but I don't think that, like, Indiana would be leaving just heapings of money on the table if they went with one over the other.
Zach, I think Purdue obviously has been a surprise, maybe because we had question marks about what the Boilermakers were going to be. When I look at Indiana, I think they're exactly what I expected them to be at this point. I have not seen a surprise. For better or for worse, I've not been surprised by anything. Am I missing anything? Have you been surprised by anything you've seen from the Hoosiers so far this season?
I think the one piece that has surprised me is, and it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit, is how good the freshmen have looked, and in particular, how Malik Renew has kind of rounded out that bench, because it does very much, and you'll even, you know, if you ask them the right way, you can even get Indiana's players to kind of talk about almost like they've got a starting four and a bench four, and then Xavier Johnson and Jalen Hutchefino are kind of the bridge between the two as the primary ball handlers. You know, you knew that Indiana had some guys that were intriguing on that bench. We've seen the tools that a Jordan Geronimo has, that a Trey Calloway has, that a Tamar Bates has. But it does seem like Malik Renew, being as college-ready as he's proven to be to this point, and it's worth saying it's not just against the bad teams. He was the star off the bench among that four in the win at Xavier with 12.6 rebounds, played most of the way down the stretch in that game in some key minutes. It feels like he's rounded that group out, and it does feel like that bench has a chance to be, you know, as much as this is a thing, because it is some nights and it's not some nights, that's just the nature of basketball, but has a chance to be one of the better benches in the country. And if you can do that, if you're Mike Woodson, as much as we've seen Mike Woodson want to have these rotations that are very sort of like, you know, I know he doesn't always love it when people describe it this way, but they are very reminiscent of the way an NBA coach handles his rotations. then you need that four to be really good. And you need that four to be really good together, not just individually, but you need those lineups to play well together, and they have. And I think that's where maybe Indiana has raised its ceiling a little bit. The three-point shooting has been good, but it's early. The free-throw shooting has been okay. It's been certainly better than it was a year ago, but it's early. The defense could probably stand to be a little bit better than it's been, but again, it's early. I think personnel-wise and in terms of just like the tools that Mike Woodson has in his bag this year compared to a year ago, how ready those two freshmen at the top end, Hood Schifino and Renew, have been, and what that's done for Mike Woodson's bench, the extent to which it feels like that's glued that bench unit together with Renew in particular, I think is probably the one thing that more than anything else leads me to believe Indiana can be better than their preseason projections suggested.
Any update on Trey Galloway?
Mike Woodson said that he's been able to participate a little bit more in practice. We talked to Woodson Tuesday morning, and he always sort of pleads innocence of not having talked to Tim Garl. Yet it seems like no matter what time of day, pregame, we talk to Mike Woodson, he hasn't had a chance to talk to Tim Garl yet. Feels convenient. It does seem like Galloway is, you know, kind of in that if this were the NFL, we'd probably call him questionable going into Wednesday night. Trace Jackson Davis is adamant he's going to play. I mean, his words were, "You'd have to bring me off on a stretcher, to get him out of that game." He admitted he's not 100%. Mike Woodson kind of made it sound like he's basically just sort of banged and bruised a little bit. Maybe he took a hard fall and he's not been as active in practice recently. But Jackson Davis was adamant. I mean, I don't remember the exact quote. He basically just said, like, "You'll all want to put that out there. I'm playing on Wednesday night." So you can expect Trace Jackson Davis back. Hubert Davis said today that he expects Armando Bacot to be able to play. Bacot apparently came out of that Alabama game with some sort of ankle problem. I think Galloway is probably the biggest question mark right now, and it does feel like it's possible, but I wouldn't necessarily, guarantee it.
Always appreciate you. Great stuff, and we'll talk to you again soon, Zach.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Yep, that is Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Be sure you follow him on Twitter. Be sure you get a subscription, Indy Star. That's your best, most comprehensive coverage, daily coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers with Zach Osterman. We're always glad when Zach takes some time to join us here on the Sports Rush. Hey, we are counting down toward the top of the hour, and that means we're just minutes away from the Mastodons Coaches Show. John Kaufman joining us in person. We'll talk about the Cancun Challenge, the win over Bluffton, a couple of big Horizon League games coming up, and the women get started with their Horizon League schedule this week. Both teams at home. So on Thursday, Saturday, you've got men's basketball. On Friday, Sunday, you've got women's basketball. And Maria Marcassano will join us on the road tonight, but she is going to be joining us via phone. So we've got both men's basketball coach John Kaufman, women's basketball coach Maria Marcassano joining us for the Mastodons Coaches Show coming up at the top of the hour. We'll take a break. We'll come back, put the final touches on this Tuesday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, a final time. I am Brett Rump, Adam Lundy in the producer's chair. Appreciate you spending some time with us here on this Tuesday, just minutes away from the Mastodons Coaches Show, live from the Holiday Inn, Purdue, Fort Wayne, the Mastodon Grill. If you're looking for a bite to eat on your way home from work today, it's a perfect place to stop on by. Right there off the lobby, right across from the Coliseum, you can come by and see us. I'll be joined by Mastodons men's basketball coach John Kaufman. Also joining us by phone will be women's basketball coach Maria Marcassano. It is the Mastodons Coaches Show presented by Diamond Residential Mortgage coming up at the top of the hour. Big thanks to our guests on today's edition of the Sports Rush, including Kyle Nedenrep from the Indy Star, Greg Rakestraw, of course, from ISC Sports Network, the voice of the Champions Network, the IHSAA Champions Network, and the postgame host for Indianapolis Colts football. And thanks to Zach Osterman from the Indy Star covering the Indiana Hoosiers. We'll be back tomorrow. It's a hump day edition of the Sports Rush on your way from 4 to 6. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, we've got Caleb and Kenny, more local sports. Get their takes tomorrow morning from 7 to 9. right here on 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM. I got to get out of here. Got to get across town. Got a show coming up in about 4 minutes. So have a great Tuesday night. Hope you join us and stick with us because the Mastodons Coaches Show comes up next on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.